Good afternoon and welcome to the weekly briefing by the Lieutenant Governor on behalf of the Baker Polito Administration to all Municipal Chief Executive Officers. Today is July 7th. The year is 2020. It feels like it should be 2021 or so. And you're joining the 16th briefing on COVID-19 that the Lieutenant Governor and her team is providing to all of you local officials who are leading the COVID-19 pandemic response in your communities. This is the administration's briefing, so we'll turn it right over to the Lieutenant Governor as she shares the information. And again, we express appreciation on behalf of the Massachusetts Municipal Association for the leadership of the Lieutenant Governor and everyone in the administration providing partnership, true partnership with cities and towns. Lieutenant Governor, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much, Jeff, and for everyone being on the call. I have with me today Sean Cronin from DLS, as well as Dr. Larry Medoff, who's our medical director at the Department of Public Health, and Michael Koenig from our governor's legal office will be joining us as well. So we look forward to our conversation and addressing any questions or concerns or hearing some ideas that you might have to help us. So I just first, I hope that your 4th of July was an enjoyable one. I know it felt very different in our communities, not having a parade or a firework display to gather to see in the evening. But there certainly was opportunity, hopefully, for you to be with your family and your friends. I thought maybe what I'd do is talk a little bit about the reopening. We did initiate phase 3. We discussed that briefly last week. And see if you have any questions about that later on in our call. But just to review that on Monday, began phase 3, step 1. In Boston, they are delayed 1 week. The Boston's phase 3 will begin on July 13th. And as many of you know, through this phased-in approach, we have usually multiple steps within the phase. So on July 7th, we began the step 1 of phase 3. And it includes a lot of indoor activities. You could tell that when we began to reopen activities in the Commonwealth, they were the lower risk, more outdoor activities. And now in phase 3, the businesses that are left are largely indoor. So we decided with the public health guidance to limit capacity and allow more of these indoor activities to begin with a lot of restrictions and capacity limits. And you obviously may have read the guidance to see that. But going down the list, it's business sectors and health clubs, some indoor cultural and historic sites. We did some capacity at movie theaters, indoor recreation like batting cages, bowling alleys, driving ranges, rock climbing, and casino gaming, horse race, simulcasting. And we did open professional sports. You saw the Red Sox announce their opening and will have official play time without spectators later in the month. Phase 3, we anticipate being a lot longer. We moved through phases 1 and 2 and the steps within over a regular pace after we had the opportunity to review data. We took around 2 weeks, sometimes a little longer, to review the data before initiating another level of activity. We anticipate phase 3 to be where we are for a long while. Phase 4 includes things like large venues, indoor activities in these kinds of venues we put off, as well as bars. You can see from other states, the bar activity has contributed to spread, and we, based upon the advice from the public health folks, moved that into phase 4. I think that proved to be beneficial to us, but it's obviously a real challenge for the businesses that fall within that category. Just briefly, the fitness centers and health clubs have a 40% permitted occupancy of a protocol around how to arrange equipment and distancing of 14 feet for people exercising. Advanced sign up are some of the features there. I would say that regarding indoor and outdoor activity, we did update the gathering order. We've discussed that. Just to simplify it, there is a square foot component of the gathering order, but basically it boils down to indoor events limited to 25 people, outdoor events that have an event host at 100. And we talked a lot about this with all of you around the kinds of events you might like to see hosted in your community. And this gives you some guidance now to work with. If there is a summer concert series that you're looking to approve, there are now some protocols and some parameters that you can work within to see those kinds of activities work for you. It came up in the context of your older adults in your community and finding some activities that they can participate in safely. So we hope that this will help you as well. Again, the movie theaters is a strict limit of 40% with a maximum occupancy of 25. And the same for outdoor performances that would follow the gathering order and some other advice that we've given there. We did hear from you a lot about libraries. They are allowed to open as part of phase three. It's a 40% of the building's maximum permitted occupancy, requiring face coverings for all workers and patrons. And computers and technology stations spaced out 6 feet apart, and books and other materials should be subject to a 24-hour quarantine. We also changed the guidance relative to youth and amateur sports. This is a challenging area. As many of you know, the guidance was released yesterday afternoon. It is on the website. I just want to put this into a bit of context for you. First of all, this is guidance for summer sports, youth and amateur sports, summer. The summer guidance took into consideration what the public health people at CDC and other organizations evaluated in helping states like ours develop a system of allowing more activity for our youth. We're obviously trying really hard to get kids back into school in the fall, and we know that these outdoor activities are really important to their social well-being and their development as young people. As the mother of two teenagers, I live with this every single day, and it's been a challenge. As many of you know, in phase two, we allowed for youth activities in facilities, both indoor and outdoor, with the groups of 10 with 20 feet apart. We've now expanded that to include not only youth, but adults, both indoor and outdoor, as part of the phase three guidance. We have also allowed for the next level of play. So there's level two, there's level three, and there's level four. Level two is basically scrimmages and inter-team activity. That is allowed for both lower risk and moderate risk sports. Those are defined in the guidances that were shared with you yesterday. An example of a lower risk sport is tennis or swimming, fishing, sailing. Moderate risk would include baseball, softball. We've heard a lot about that from you. Track and field, field hockey, no contact lacrosse. So those would be examples of low and moderate risk sports that can have a game within the team. And also level three, which is competitions between different teams being able to take place as part of phase three. For tournaments, we heard a lot about tournaments. Tournaments are defined in this guidance, and you could envision a tournament that looks like multiple teams with multiple games at the same time, and these teams coming from other jurisdictions outside of the Commonwealth. Those would be limited to low risk sports only as part of step one of the phase three reopening for more sports and youth sports and amateur sports. So I would suggest taking a read of that. Sometimes it takes a couple of days to have it sink in. There are a lot of questions about this, and certainly we are available to help you address those. We are establishing a work group for fall sports guidance, and that work group will include medical professionals, the epidemiologists, as well as the internal team that we have from DPH and DESE, and ask the sports league associations, like for instance MIAA, to join this work group and help us analyze what the challenges are relative to youth sports and analyze what the options are there. This is challenging because a lot of other states are doing this at the same time as us, and it's not as if we can look to another state and say they've developed a plan or a program around this. So we are doing this all for the first time. So we are developing our ideas and we'll share those with you when we have that more so. But just, I think that's an important distinction to make between what we released yesterday, which is summer only, and fall is under development. Let me just also say that the gathering order applies to organized activity. So 25 people inside, for instance, if a hotel wanted to host, a person at a hotel wanted to host an event indoors, that would be 25 people, and they would follow the guidance for restaurants. So it's more of a sit down, six people at a table, served event. So you have to look at that if those are issues within your community. An outdoor event, not a barbecue in your backyard, which everyone knows, if you're going to host your friends or your family, you social distance, encourage coverings and do what's appropriate there. But for an organized outdoor event, the gathering order has been changed to 100. I think I'd just like to close a couple of things. This is challenging. We have a lot more activity. I know that you saw what was happening in your community. I got a lot of pictures and text messages over the weekend, as did the governor. A lot of fireworks that were not organized. I saw a lot of beach activity that was not involving a lot of distancing or face coverings. And what I would say to that is, we will work with you in your boards of health. You've done an extraordinary job around enforcing and looking for compliance among the businesses, which have also done an extraordinary job, as well as the public. And we are reviewing and evaluating what other options we can have available to us and to you to continue to strongly encourage and work with everyone to continue to be as compliant as possible. We all know, based upon what we've studied and learned about the virus, that face coverings are very effective. When two people wear a face covering, the ability for particles to transfer is reduced significantly. And we will continue to have to work together to message. I see when I go about my hometown, there are message boards up that turn the message over and over about social distancing and face covering. You know, keep those going. We'll use all the social media and mass DOT assets that we can to continue to put that message out there. It really does need to be on the forefront of people's minds at a time when people are thinking about, you know, vacationing perhaps or doing more outdoors because the weather is good. So we'll have to continue to work with you through that compliance process. Finally, the DESE Remote Learning Grant is now live. The applications are due July 21. This was highlighted in the Commissioner's Weekly Update, so I wanted that to come over to you so that you can take advantage of that as we ask school districts to work on their plans to address student learning this fall. So take advantage of that grant. I know many of you are taking advantage of the Shared Street and Spaces grant. There are some of you that had questions last week, and I believe MassDOT has worked with you to address your questions. And hopefully that those dollars are reaching you. We had expected it to be a rapid turnaround so that you can put those dollars to work. So I just want to leave it at that for now. It's a lot that you're sorting through with the phase three reopening, which is usually the case when the new information comes out. And I look forward to hearing what your concerns are there and addressing any other questions that you have. I also know that with the few weeks left in this session, there's a lot before the legislature. For instance, today we highlighted at an event in Plymouth that Triple E is also a threat. It is so hard to even think about the impact that this COVID virus is having, and then to think about Triple E as a threat as well, but it clearly is. We have two identified cases in Franklin County, and we appreciate the work of the mosquito control districts, and we would like the legislation to be processed so that we can think about addressing the larvae and having active spraying where it makes sense to reduce the exposure to individuals and families across our state. Like the virus for COVID, it knows no boundaries. The mosquitoes and birds moving about don't have a boundary either. And we want to be able to manage this as effectively as possible with all of you. So that, along with budget and so many other pieces of legislation before the body, we've got a lot of work to do over the next few months. I'll turn it back over to you.
Great, thank you very much. And thank you for emphasizing the other important issues as well, including Triple E, which just until a couple of years ago was really southeastern Massachusetts.
That's right.
It's important. On the air at the same time, this is just another important one to deal with. There are a number of questions in the chat function, and what I'll do is I'll go through the ones related to the reopening process first and COVID-19, and then we'll go back to the others. You had touched on this earlier, Lieutenant Governor, regarding phase three being longer. Could you talk a little bit more about that, and then what the process is to get to step two of phase three, because that presumably will come well before phase four?
Yes, we will continue to look at the data like we have before. So it's data, not dates, that will drive step two as part of the reopening process. And as far as step two, this would include indoor performance venues used for live performances, such as concert halls and theaters, and other recreational activities like laser tag, roller skating, trampolines, obstacle courses. So that's what you should be thinking about for step two. In terms of the indoor performances, you know, we had some questions around why some of these cultural institutions opening in step one and why the live performances as step two. And the concern from public health are that with a live performance, singing and, you know, the particle spread there would require further distancing between the performers and the patrons, and wanting to evaluate the first step activity before activating that. So we'll look at the data over the next couple of weeks before making a decision on the categories in step two. And we will keep you informed. Once step two is activated, then the phase three will just appear as it is now for a longer period of time. We don't anticipate then another couple of weeks before phase four begins. We will just have phase three continue and monitor for a while. It's really important when we think about fall that there's more that needs to happen, in particular getting our kids back into school and working with all of you. And that would be a really important next step to focus on and just keep phase three once step two is activated the way it is for a period of time. Some people envision phase four as needing other advancements in either treatment and medicine, more antibody testing or availability there, what herd immunity looks like. For instance, there was an interesting article in the Wall Street Journal that talked today about herd immunity and antibodies and who has them and who doesn't and why. And there's just so much that we don't know about this virus, and activating some of those large venues with spectators and concerts just doesn't seem conceivable at this point, and we would want to see some of these other advancements in place before we could do that. A vaccine, obviously, we all read about the status of vaccines, but that's a little further down in the distance. And I think that some of this treatment and antibody work, if that would become available, it does change a lot. And it's just not in our hands at this time.
Thank you. The next question goes, and I'm sure it's coming from the perspective of office space in a municipal setting. The capacity has been moved up, the recommended, or the capacity has been moved from 25% to 50%. Do you envision any changes in the near future on that percentage for office space?
That's an interesting question. And if Mike Caneb is on, he could speak to this from our legal office. But at this point, we envision 50% being about right. Maybe for the fall, we would have to evaluate what makes sense. I would like to hear from the municipalities. I mean, you can activate at a higher capacity your essential services if that's something that you need to accommodate. And I think the fall is going to be an interesting next phase as if kids get back into school learning and parents get more back to work, even on a 1 week on, 1 week off schedule for parents, or a few days in the office and some at home. I mean, we're hearing that from a lot of employers that it might not just be come Labor Day, everyone's going back to work full time in person. There seems to be some different approaches that employers are taking into consideration. So we'll evaluate that with you and evaluate that with some of the industry associations to determine what the next level of capacity makes sense there. And it should be also tied to the enablers that we discussed earlier on in this process, like transportation. And MassDOT continues to expand options for public transportation, mass transit, and commuter rail, but the demand is not there today, but it may increase come the fall. So those are the things we just need to continue to monitor. Obviously, the activation of childcare, moving beyond emergency childcare, has also been very good in a big challenge for child care providers, no doubt. But those are the kinds of things that we need to make sure are available as more office capacity also comes online.
Hi, Jeff, this is Mike Caneb from the Governor's Legal Office. And just to fill in a little bit more for what the Lieutenant Governor said. As applied to municipal offices, there's quite a lot of flexibility under the rule. It is a 50% capacity, but there is an exception for greater use, greater density, if the office is fulfilling a public health, public safety, or other critical service. And we think that in the case of municipal offices, that would be, you know, fairly often they may have that need. And so they're fully authorized to make that determination on their own. There's no advance certification required.
Thank you very much on that. And yes, and communities are working. It's so hard to have uniform approaches because our communities are so different. The town halls and city halls are so different. The commuting patterns for how people get to work are different. And so the flexibility is greatly appreciated as well. Let's see. So thank you, Michael. The next question was, it looks as though there was a lot of sector-specific guidance that was updated just yesterday. How are these updates different from previous guidance, and how should the updates be addressed by communities? Well, that's a big question because there are a lot of changes, but essentially you're updating for phase three, even some of the original guidances that were issued.
Yeah, so there were some updates to phase one and two from a capacity standpoint. So those are guidances that you have to be familiar with. And then new industry sectors opening. I do want to speak to the indoor and outdoor events. I see that also in the chat. And these event spaces such as ballrooms, private party rooms, and public places like parks that have an event have guidance that they can review, specific event guidance that you should be familiar with depending on the kind of event for you to be able to manage through. So we feel that will be helpful to you when deciding how to issue a permit, say, for an outdoor event. And then, of course, if you have any of these kinds of facilities within your community, there is specific event guidance that you can look to. There still is I think someone asked about a wedding. Well, a wedding should follow the event guidance, but there is still no dance floor and there's still no bar capacity allowed in phase three. So the event guidance is specific and we encourage you to take a look at that.
Thank you. Yes, the dance floor question was a good one, but I think I figured out the answer even before you said it. Certainly, social distancing on a dance floor makes dancing not as much of an event. But anyway, the next question has to do with the differences in occupancy caps or patron limits and so on. There's a question about the patron limit in movie theaters, and then why masks in movie theaters and not at tables while not eating at a restaurant, for example.
I'm going to ask Dr. Madoff to give us some thinking on that, and so it can help our local officials determine how to manage some of this with us.
I think so was the specific question about movie theaters or?
Yes.
We all have special concerns about indoor spaces with many people gathered. I can't speak to exactly what the limits are in movie theaters in particular, but I think that this is all something that we envision as being higher risk events than, say, you know, some of the sporting events or outdoor events that are being put forward in phase three. What we in public health think is most important is ventilation, outdoor, and maintaining the 6-foot distance. And those are really the standards that we think are the most important. And one issue in movie theaters in particular revolves around popcorn eating and concessions. It's hard to keep a mask on while doing those things, and I think that also increases the risk somewhat in those settings.
Okay, and I do think that there is, Assistant Commissioner, did you have something to add to that? Yes.
Yeah, I think, yes, I think I can help speak to the thought behind the occupancy percentage caps versus a patron limit, if this is helpful. The way that I understand it is when you look at a place like a house of worship or a casino or a restaurant, you're thinking about patrons and staff in a fairly spread out space. There's a lot of movement around. And the intention is to set an occupancy limit so that there's not so many people in a room that there would be a lot of crowding. Where you have a movie theater, you have the staff are by and large not in the movie theaters themselves. They're kind of behind the scenes and in literally. And the there are chairs that are spaced out. So you can set social distancing by closing off chairs and allowing, and it's easier to calculate how many chairs you have in a movie theater. And so how many people could be let in to ensure that there's social distancing as part of the movie watching experience. It's harder to do that in a house of worship or casino. So for to assist businesses and communities to understand the enforcement of that, it's easier for them to think about an occupancy percentage than it is like the number of people who can safely be in that space. Where, you know, as you can see in a movie theater, it's fairly reasonable to calculate how many numbers you have and then, you know, divide them appropriately.
Okay. Let's stay on this topic a little bit more. I see that Mark Hawk has a question regarding the gathering order update, and maybe Mike Canib can address this more specifically, because the indoor event guidance, each operator of an indoor event limit occupancy at all times to 8 persons per 1,000 square feet of accessible indoor floor space and no more than 25 persons. And as Mark Hawk points out, in a lot of cases, this is less than the prior 10-person gathering limit. So can you clarify that?
I mean, I guess it would be a fairly small room, I guess, if it's less than the 10-person. Maybe we would need to look at some statistics on that. But, you know, I think when we were thinking of an expansion in phase three, we were very much focused on the idea of 25 as being more than 10. And maybe the comment has to do with 8 persons per 1,000 square feet. I don't know if that is the question. It's a measure that we had adopted for retail spaces and applied here, and it's possible it has some unintended effect.
Well, correct. It is not an or. Is that correct, Mike?
Right, yes. There's a cap of 25, up to 25, but the density should not be more than 8 persons per 1,000 square feet up to 25.
And the previous gathering order, if it even though there was a gathering order limit of 10 people, not if it was a phone booth, they would have to socially distance. So you see a little lessening with the square footage, but there still would have been an indirect cap lower than 10 in other circumstances, given the size of the room of the facility.
Right. If we
there was just no square footage associated with the earlier. It was such a low number. There was no square footage associated with it. But, you know, 25 in a very small room would be concerning.
So we will take a look at that more closely. And if there's clarification needed, we can provide that.
Thank you. Also, there's another question for the DPH folks. They have a circumstance in this community where they've learned from a regional health nurse that the owner and some employees of a restaurant have tested positive for COVID-19. The restaurant's currently closed. They're concerned about who's going to enforce what the requirements will be at that restaurant before its reopening is allowed. And then also some assistance in terms of public messaging, because they're concerned that the news of this will spread and they need to, they would like to be out in front in terms of messaging about the appropriate folks taking charge of public safety.
I can try to address that. So every case of COVID is managed by public health. In most cases, this would be a job for local public health, and if the local board of health in your community has the capacity to manage this, and they would work very closely with the individual, they would perform contact tracing, and they would reach out to the restaurant involved. Whether or not a restaurant needed to be closed or for what period of time would be a case-by-case situation. In the case of a single individual in a restaurant, it might only be necessary to close the restaurant for a day to allow it to be thoroughly cleaned, make sure that the contacts were identified, and then any close contacts would also be quarantined and wouldn't be able to go back to work. So in some cases that might preclude a restaurant from reopening, but in many cases if there were other personnel available, and this is not dissimilar from situations where we have a foodborne outbreak in a restaurant or other situations that need to be managed by local health. Certainly we at DPH are also available for consultation, and you and your public health people can reach us anytime at our 617-983-6800 number. And we have a staff of epidemiologists that are very familiar with these kinds of situations and can help you with messaging as well if that's necessary. Thanks. I don't know, Jana, do you want to add anything?
Excellent. Thank you very much. It's an unfortunate but not uncommon situation. I think we've covered the COVID-19 questions, so there are a couple of other points on other topics, Lieutenant Governor. Are you game for that?
Happy to. I wanted to ask for some feedback on, as now that more activity is taking place in your communities, this is self-compliance and individual responsibility to a large extent. Are you receiving calls to your boards of health, to your town and city department heads or city council office or select boards offices with complaints? And I'm just wondering, with more activity taking place, are you hearing more complaints from your residents relative to non-compliance? And maybe provide us some feedback as to how we can help to manage that better with you.
That's a great question. As usual, we'd invite people to, if you have comments or response to that, please post something in the chat function for the panelists and attendees to see, and we'll share that information with the Lieutenant Governor and her team. That's certainly one of the topics that came out in the beginning. One of the big concerns was that would communities have the capacity to respond to what was expected to be a large number of complaints, but it does seem as though, anecdotally at least, there's been a high degree of it for, in Massachusetts, compliance and wariness regarding wearing face coverings and following the rules. And also you've done a very strong and controlled rollout and reopening process. So hopefully that has minimized what would be complaints, but that would be important information. So if anyone there is there in the chat and would like to share whether or not you're aware of additional or higher volume than ordinary of complaints coming in, please, of non-compliance. In addition, I see someone has raised their hand, but we don't use the raise the hand function. So if you have a question, please type in the chat function. And I see some people starting to type in regarding complaints. In the meantime, there's a question regarding funding for mail-in ballots and early in-person voting and working to ensure that the new elections law that the legislature passed, and I'm not sure it's on, is it on the governor's desk, or have you made a decision yet?
That has been processed by the governor's office. I know that the Secretary of the Commonwealth has to manage this process with all of you. And there are certain parts of the mailing process that can be covered by the CARES Act, and there are other parts that cannot. So it is a question that the Secretary of the Commonwealth will need to address with all of you regarding how to process the mailing and the cost associated with the mailing process.
And I think that it will not be a surprise to know that the MMA would be asking for full reimbursement of the additional costs beyond the CARES Act eligibility. But that's a part of our standing position regarding new mandated activities. And then another question was, is there any more information on the budget? We know that the legislature has enacted and the governor has signed a temporary budget, at least for this month. And all eyes are on Washington, D.C. to see federal aid because a decision by the federal government to provide revenue loss assistance and relief could propel a budget process forward. Do you have any further information in terms of the status?
I wish I had more information for you. I think a lot of us are awaiting the decisions in Washington relative to community relief. And we have been in touch with our delegation to talk about that and just emphasize on your behalf and with you how important that is. And we will monitor that as well as our receipts being next week, being the mid part of the month when more tax revenue is due. That will also be informative to all of us around how to manage the next fiscal year. So I would say next week or maybe a little after the 15th, we'll have more information around what's happening here in the Commonwealth for tax receipts. And by the end of the month, have better idea if Washington is going to provide any further relief. But clearly that would be very helpful and very important to see done. I would stay active in terms of your communications with the delegation to emphasize how important this is.
Yes, the MMA is part of a broad national coalition that's working with or local officials in other parts of the country where their Senate delegation is not right now supportive of direct aid to states and localities. Our delegation is very strongly in support, and we appreciate that, but we need more movement in order to provide that that relief and make sure there are enough votes to get it through the Senate and at least have a package that the House and the Senate can agree on. So we're working nationally in addition to staying in close touch with our congressional delegation, again, all of whom support us. So, and thank you for your efforts to share the harsh reality with Congress, and also working with the National Governors Association and other national organizations to make the case beyond the borders of Massachusetts. We appreciate that. There's a question regarding, we're back on COVID. 19, question regarding bar areas converted to tables. Are these establishments able to retain their original closing times on the liquor licenses, or can a locality impose an earlier closing time since food must be served along with liquor? Sounds like a Michael Kinnib question.
Yeah. There you go, Mike. That's a good one for you.
Thank you very much. That sounds like it involves subtleties of liquor license law that I actually I can't speak to, but I'd be happy to look at. It was intended as a simple adjustment that if there was a restaurant, say, that had a bar area in the back, they could use that space for restaurant seating and not make it totally useless, especially given the greater distances that they need to put between tables. But it was intended to make clear that bar service, standing at the bar service, is not permitted for the reasons we discussed earlier. So we did not contemplate how that might affect closing times or any other terms of the license. But that sounds like something, maybe if somebody could follow up with the question, we could see if we can be helpful in getting to an answer on that.
We forward the questions to the governor's office or lieutenant governor, and then unanswered questions are provided back, and we provide those in updates and our stories posted on the MMA website for all local officials. And so thank you very much. I think also a recommendation would be to talk with town council or city solicitor, because it may depend on the type of permit or license that was that's underlying an issue. So the issues, the subtlety may be nuanced from community to community as well. We can't have a session go by without a question for Sean Cronin. Here is one. Is there an update from ANF about whether certain COVID-related capital expenditures can be charged to the CARES Act allocation? One example would be upgrading ventilation systems in municipal buildings. Hello, Sean.
Oh, can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Okay. There has been some guidance provided in terms of capital type projects, and we did issue a new FAQ. I'll double check to see if it's been posted yet, but that does address it. And it's really got to be smaller scale capital projects in nature. So I don't think $1.8 million HVAC replacement system is something that would be covered under the CARES Act. But if there's some specific questions are around some specific examples, we can definitely get the answers to it. And again, I'll double check the new FAQs to see if they've actually been posted yet, because I know the construction issue has been a frequent flyer into our question email box over the course of the last few weeks.
And so individuals can also go to the DLS website and take a look at the information that you post as you post those updates as well. Is that correct?
Yes. Like I said, the FAQ should be up there, but I'll double check. And if the person asking the question or people asking the question want some additional detail about project types, just email that CARES Act email address that we have right off on the DLS website. And we have some pretty quick turnaround on those Qs and Q&As.
Thank you. Well, Lieutenant Governor, I think that we have run through all of the questions. We've had a number of comments from communities regarding volumes of complaints, and we'll share that with you and your team right after this call. Also, we will be posting on the MMA website an audio recording of your briefing for local officials and these answers, and a summary article capturing the questions, answers, and discussions and presentation will be posted on the MMA website today as well. Do you have any closing comments for all of the local officials out there who appreciate your work so much?
Just to, again, a thank you on behalf of our team to yours. You're sorting through a lot of information relative to phase three of the reopening, so we'll continue to work with you there. Continued enforcement and compliance is really needed in order for us to have continued success. We wouldn't be in this position to reopen more activity in the Commonwealth without that compliance. And you and your boards of health have been extraordinary in this effort and an essential partner in seeing this success. And we have a successful summer, we'll have a successful fall. So we'll continue to provide you with any additional updates for phase three. Obviously in the next week to two, we will be focusing more so on budget and working with you there. And I look forward to the next meeting that we have, and anything that comes up in between time that you need further guidance on, we're here to help. But thank you for your input as well on compliance. We're thinking about ways that we can better support you there. and we'll share that when we've developed our plan.
Thank you very much, Lieutenant Governor. And as always, we will send out a notice when we schedule the next briefing. They have been weekly. As we enter the fall, we'll be working with, or enter the summer, we'll be working with the Lieutenant Governor's office and team what the schedule of these briefings will be. We expect that they will continue regularly, and we will provide advance notice to everyone of those sessions. And we appreciate so much all of the information and all of your availability, Lieutenant Governor, and to the whole team who's been here today. Thank you very much.
Thank you all.
Thank you. We wish you all a good day.
Yeah, thank you. Bye-bye. Thanks, everyone.